What's up? I'm Tyler.
And I'm Dakota.
And this is the Bourbon and Business Podcast,
where we interview successful businessmen and women to let you in on why success doesn't have a single formula to follow.
We also have a little bourbon tasting along the way, because why not?
So guys, please enjoy this episode and let us know your thoughts at Bourbon and Business Podcast on Instagram.
Coming to you from the Bourbon and Business Studios here in the Capitol Club in downtown Jackson, Mississippi. I'm Tyler.
And I'm Dakota.
And this is the Bourbon and Business Podcast. How you doing this morning, Dakota?
You know how I'm doing, Tyler. Fantastic.
Doing fantastic.
How are you?
I'm doing great and enjoying this view that we have here. You want to tell our listeners a little bit about this view?
I would absolutely love to. This view is of the Jackson skyline. It's from the Capitol Club here in downtown Jackson, Mississippi. It's where we film our podcast, or where we record our podcast, and it has the best views in Jackson. Where they've got event space here, they've got membership pricing, they've got daily lunches, they've got an online presence. What else they have, Tyler?
I mean, you named about everything, but they also have the 20th floor that will be opening soon, which we have gotten the pleasure of shooting some of our podcasts up here, our recording. I don't know, you said shooting, so I said it, but we're recording
now, it's my fault, right?
Yeah, recording our podcast up here. And so you should see on our social media what the 20th floor looks like. But, I mean, phenomenal atmosphere, phenomenal location. And if you're not a member, you're missing out.
No doubt.
Will you introduce our guest to us this morning?
Yes. Today we have special guest Seth Power, the CEO of Tribly. Seth, it's a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
Glad to have you this morning.
Absolutely.
And what about our bourbon? What are we drinking on today?
Today we brought your favorite, a rye whiskey.
Yes, definitely. I'm not going to say that this has nothing to do with this whiskey, but rye whiskey is not my favorite.
So. This is called Rittenhouse. It's 100 proof bottled and bond, which is U.S. government standard of what a whiskey can be bottled at. What do you think?
I mean, it's good. Especially for a rye whiskey. I mean, I feel like you almost should have a different rating category for a rye versus a bourbon. But I'm going to give them a 8.0.
8.0. Okay, yeah, that's strong for a guy who doesn't even like rye.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good whiskey. I would drink it for sure. Good. What'd you pay for the bottle?
20, 30 bucks.
20 or 30 bucks.
Yep. Where did I get it, Tyler?
So you got it at Cheers Vineyard in Gluckstadt, Mississippi.
Sure did.
And shout out to our sponsor, Cheers. They have literally any type of bourbon you can think of.
Just about, yeah.
Any liquor in general, wines, whatever you want. They've got it there. They have a knowledgeable staff. Ask for JT. He can help you find whatever, and he can tell you the story behind it as well.
Yeah, JT has a story for everything. Now, if you ask me whether those stories are true or not, I cannot confirm nor deny if they are true. But there is a story for every single bottle in that store. I guarantee it. And please, for real, if you're listening to this podcast, go in, just check them out. Say hey to JT, let them know that we sent you, and they'll hook you up with some great stuff.
Yeah. Well, Seth, we appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah.
Glad to have you. We'd like to always start this off, you know, because we're from Mississippi and everybody wants to know where you're from. Mm-hmm. Just tell all our listeners where you're from, where you grew up, and then how you got into the business that you're in today and got it started.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm from Brandon, Mississippi, so about 20 minutes from here. I was born here. I'm first generation Mississippian, so my dad is from New York. My mom is from Michigan. They both moved down here. Their parents moved down here for work. My grandfather was a professor at Ole Miss. My other grandfather was a chemical engineer up in North Mississippi. And so we found our way down here, and I was born and raised in Brandon. I live there still. I got a wife, two kids. You know, I work in the music business, so the company Tribly works on the e-commerce and CRM side. So essentially, you know, I grew up in a household of music. My parents were in a band together when they were dating.
So cool.
Yeah, there was, you know, I grew up in a house with pianos and guitars and stuff. And so music wasn't really, it was never forced upon me, but it was something that I just adopted, really, just because it was around me. And for a long time, it was just something I did for fun. And, you know, obviously you do something over and over again, you start to get good at it. By the time I was in college, I was playing a lot of gigs. I went to Mississippi State. So I was playing shows every weekend. That's how I was making all my money. I mean, it was amazing. You know, we'd play at a bar till 4 a.m., you know, free drinks, you know, hanging out with people. It was about as good as it could be as a college student. Yeah, just sort of naturally kept following that path. You know, I majored in business at State. I fell in love with the process of, like, I actually genuinely enjoyed entrepreneurship class. I genuinely enjoyed, like, coming up with a business plan. I like the numbers. It's kind of the right and left side of my brain tend to, I appreciate the creative side, but I also really like to kind of dig in on the business side too. And so yeah, I just kept following my feet. I kept following opportunities, and, you know, through the process of trying to become an original artist, I used every tool imaginable and, just tied myself up into knots trying to understand, like, how do I know who my fans are? Cause I built, you know, every artist is building pockets of audiences all over the internet, right? Yeah. You've got your Instagram following, you got TikTok, you got, you know, your email list, your SMS list. And it's, none of these platforms give you any real information to help you understand ultimately, like, the difference between, like a true fan, someone that's coming to shows, buying merchandise, et cetera, versus someone who, like, saw a reel a year ago and hit the follow button. You know, there's no differentiation between those two. And so there's a real data issue in the industry. There's a real, depth issue. You know, all the platforms are designed for width. None of them are really designed for depth. And this was stuff that it was just percolating for me for a long time, but I was never able to, like, actually take it seriously as to what a solution could look like. I was working 6-7 days a week in a restaurant trying to finance an album back in 2019. I had 80 tour dates lined up in 2020. I was fortunate enough to play 20 of those, but then COVID happened. And so touring goes away, restaurants go away. And so, you know, I'm just kind of sitting there after, like, 2 weeks of watching Netflix with my wife. You know, I was like, I need to do something different with my time. And, all these ideas have been floating around. And so I started to put them down on paper, and I started to send them to people, and they were like, yeah, these are real problems. What do we do? And I was like, I don't know. Do we build something? Do we make a company? And so I just started asking questions. You know, I went to the Accelerate conference around here in Jackson. I started meeting people. I started sitting down with more seasoned business people and just saying, you know, I have this idea. I have no idea how to take it and make it into something real. And so over the last 3.5 years, went from that idea to, we just closed our first major investment financing round, yesterday.
Wow. Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you. So we had a, you know, not crazy money, but a healthy 6-figure round, which gives us plenty of runway to build a team. So we've got developers, you know, I've got a CTO who's also a pretty prevalent business guy around here, Ben Hubbard. And yeah, so we're, you know, now we've got a real company. We've got real users coming on board next week. So we're doing it, and it's just been a step-by-step process, really.
That's fantastic, man. What a cool story too, from going on the side of actually being an artist, right? And I know you still are. Once an artist, always an artist. But, you know, you're touring, you're doing that thing, and then you get put on hold. You're like, well, what else can I do? You know, and then you went to the logic side of your brain, and you're like, well, here's all these issues that I've always talked about or complained about or whatever. What if we could solve them?
Yeah.
And now you're actually putting that into practice and going into, like, a seed round of funding and things like that. Words you probably never thought you'd actually use after taking entrepreneurship at State.
Actually using my business degree.
Yeah. That's fantastic though.
Yeah. I've been very fortunate, and it's very hard, obviously. Entrepreneurship, as you guys know, is very difficult to step on your own and away from the comfort of steady pay and steady benefits and stuff like that, especially with a wife and kids and stuff. But, you know, it's very fulfilling. It's very stressful a lot of times.
Let's talk a little bit about that, that fear there of like stepping out on your own and taking on this task of, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah.
How do you build those relationships with people, and how do you use those relationships to then propel you forward? Cause a lot of people, you know, they're like, oh, well, you know, they did great. They worked and they made themselves a successful company or whatever. Well, how'd you do it?
Yeah. Well, the success part is to be determined at this point, but we've got the money to make a really good run at it. And I feel very confident. You know, we've done an incredible amount of market research. I spend a lot of my time talking to people all the time. LinkedIn is very useful for us. I speak with managers, people that work in the label ecosystem, whether at a major level or an independent level. And so I've got my ear very close to the ground, and there's really no other way to build something. If you want it to actually be impactful and be able to do something at scale, you gotta intimately understand what the issues are and how to solve them, because especially with software, like user experience and stuff is very, very crucial. Because there was a time, you know, 10, 15 years ago where like people were forgiving with first products, like MVPs, you know, like Uber as an MVP was like just a piece of crap, you know. A lot of the social media platforms were very simple, but it was new. And so people were open to using a crappy product if it solved a real problem. Right. And now I think those times are gone. I think that the consumer expectation is extremely high. Mm. Like when something new launches, it's like, if it's not as good as the mainstream stuff, it's like, well, that, I'm not going to use that.
Yeah.
And people are overloaded with apps now. People don't want to download new things. And so you have to, I think now, even though it's easier than ever to reach that end user, it's like you have to be more, the problem you're solving has to be very specific and very prevalent, you know. And what's fortunate with us is that if I had managed to get the financing and the team together back in 2020 or 2021, I don't think that the problems that we're addressing right now were as intense or heightened as they were then. And so it also just comes down to timing, because right now it's everybody that I'm talking to is trying to figure this stuff out, and there's not really any major solutions that have gotten any significant traction in the industry. And so people, even though like we're a smaller company, people at high levels are taking this very seriously because they don't really have a lot of options, right? It's not like these problems are being solved by the Metas and the ByteDance, you know, and the Salesforce. There's not like a Salesforce for music, you know, anywhere out there. Yeah. And so, so yeah, people, like at this point, it's like, and if it works the way you say it works and we can do it at scale, then like we're interested. So,
and that really way they don't have to spend an arm and a leg to develop them themselves.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. We're taking on all the risk to build it. And so yeah, it works well. So now it's just a matter of putting it out there and trying to make it grow.
So what exactly is Tribly in a nutshell?
I can tell you what it will be in 6 months, and I can tell you what it is today. The ultimate vision for this is like we're trying to solve problems and we're trying to unlock opportunities, right? So on the problem solving side, it all comes down to one thing, and then there's sort of like subsets to that problem. But the one thing is that artists as a whole, and by extension their teams, their managers, their agents, their labels, do not have direct relationships with fans, right? Like right now, the most direct relationship that you can have with a fan is probably through email or SMS. And email is a 50-year-old technology. So there's not been any real innovation on that front in a very long time. But the reason that a lot of people in the industry still focus on email specifically is because it's one of the only ways that you can own the data. It's the only way that you can own the audience, right? When you put a piece of content into Instagram or TikTok or wherever, you don't control where that goes. You have no control over who it reaches. And we all know that having 1 million followers on TikTok does not mean that when you put out a video, you get 1 million views, right? That's not how it works. And so you don't have any real control over the relationship. And for a long time, the music industry hasn't cared about that because it's been this pursuit of like all out scale. Like how do we just go like maximum reach, right? But now that that's slowing down, and streaming is starting to become oversaturated, the growth in streaming is slowing down, now everybody's kind of picking their head up and being like, okay, so like, I think we kind of tapped the width side of this. How do we go deeper? And so what we are doing is like, we're building a suite of direct to fan tools that allow the artist to be able to essentially turn every interaction with a fan into a community building exercise. So whether you come to a show, you buy a piece of merchandise, you stream my music, you download my music, you engage me on social media, there are inroads. We're building inroads through all these different platforms into a centralized community where once those people pass that threshold and join that community on Tribly, the artist now has a direct line to them where 100% of the things that they put out from a content perspective goes to 100% of their audience, and they get all of that data. So we capture first party and third party data. So names, email addresses, mailing list opt-ins, locations, et cetera. And so this is crucial because none of the social media platforms give us this. You can have 100 million followers. You know, you can be Justin Bieber and have 100 million followers. You have none of that data, like none of the real data. You can see how people are engaging, but you can't control how they access it, and you can't get any of the information. Same with touring. Live Nation, Ticketmaster, they own the touring industry. There is no alternative. The reason that Taylor Swift has to use Ticketmaster is there is no alternative. This is exactly why they're being discussed in Congress as potentially, you know, hey, we might need to break this up.
Like, right.
We're going into monopoly territory. Yeah. the data that they collect for touring is proprietary for them. So you can sell a million tickets, and you, and even though you and your team put up the marketing budget to sell the tickets, you get none of the data. You get no names, no email addresses, no locations, nothing, right? So it's a huge issue that no one's ever really been able to figure out. And so we're part of that solution of helping to circumnavigate these huge, like, mainstream channels and give artists ways directly, like at the point of experience, at the show, you know, as a part of the merchandise sale, at the, you know, the live stream online, whatever it is, to bring those people in, bring those fans in. And we don't expect anybody to leave TikTok to come to Tribly, but it's, that's not the point. It's about having a complement where when you have that viral moment, now funnel those people down into a space where you can control it. And so that's what we're doing today. We're also integrating with Shopify. So you'll be able to sell music direct to fans, highly competitive rates relative to like iTunes. You'll be able to sell merch direct to fans. We're pulling in live streams for engagement. And then we're implementing a loyalty system in June, July. So that's kind of where like the opportunity lies, is that the loyalty, like customer relationship management industry is growing rapidly. Like we've all been a part of rewards programs, right? Like sure. Chick-fil-A, Starbucks, yeah. Credit card points. We're essentially building out that layer into the experience as well, to where it's like we can quantify all these actions. They equate to real, like tangible value relative to the rest of that fan base, which is great data for the artist. And then it gives a higher return on fandom to the fan, which is a problem for fans right now too.
And I would assume that this is going to be probably mainly adopted by people who are independent at first.
Most likely.
Is that, you think, versus like the huge, you know, brands or the huge labels out there?
Yeah, it's, you know, we're having conversations with those people, but
I'm thinking of people, you know, who started a gig maybe in COVID, right? Mm-hmm. And they were just making beats in their room mm-hmm. and blew up on TikTok. And now they have millions of followers, millions of views, millions of everything. And they're getting paid on that on Spotify and stuff. And it's great.
Right.
But like you said, they don't own any of that data. They don't have mm-hmm. any form of communication with their fans other than Instagram or anything like that.
Right. And what you see with viral spikes is that, like, it's great. It's awesome. It's hard to do. But then it immediately begins this process of like diminishing returns, right? So those people start to slip through your fingers. Mm-hmm. That's the most accessible portion of the market. They're typically, their teams are small. So like the time it takes to get to yes is like smaller. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you go after a huge artist, it's like they've got management. They, you know, they've got some
red tape.
There's a lot of different red tape. Yeah. So the good news is that the majors will have the conversation because they're trying to solve the problem too. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to accessibility, like the middle of the market, like that's really our strategy. Let's like start in the middle and let's build outward from there.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, what's the current state of the music industry right now? As far as I know, you mentioned like Ticketmaster mm-hmm. and COVID and all those things. How's that impacting the music industry?
Yeah. I mean, obviously those were tough years. Now, you know, Ticketmaster, Live Nation, like they're like breaking all of their records. I mean, they're making more money than they've ever made now. They're also gouging people like never before. I mean, you've seen the ticket prices. Like I think Lana Del Rey came and played at the Brandon Amphitheater recently and it was like $400 for a ticket. Right. So
crazy.
It's insane.
It used to be like 50.
Yeah.
You know?
It's unbelievable. And what they're doing is they're testing the market always. And what they're finding is that people will pay that money. Right. So
Taylor Swift just made $1 billion off a tour.
Yeah. Exactly. And so I'd say we're in the middle of a shift right now because, there again, like I think the last decade has been like this all out pursuit of scale and we're seeing like a big slowdown. We're seeing a lot of saturation in streaming. Like streaming is like the thing that like rejuvenated the music industry. And sure. Yes. But streaming is also like a kind of a passive form of consumption as a fan. Right. So it just plays further into the same thing that social media does, which it's like shallow level interactions. So the state of the industry now is like this realization is happening and now they're looking at, okay, we've got maximum reach. We've achieved that. How do we start going down and deeper into the funnel? And so the CEO of Universal Music Group said earlier this year, our focus is super fan products and experiences. Warner's CEO said the same thing, that their focus is super fan products and experiences. And so Goldman Sachs released a big report saying that the super fan opportunity is a, by 2030 is a $4 billion untapped market, that nobody has tapped that market at all up to this point. $4 billion a year is a considerable amount of money. And so there's a combination of data and just like experiential data, I think, quantitative and experiential, that's sort of putting everybody in the same headspace, which is, okay, we need to start going deeper, but and simultaneously we need to look at how we can start maybe building this stuff internally or working with people within the music industry that want to work with us internally, because we understand now what it means to work with TikTok. We understand what it means to work with Meta, and like, they're not here to serve our needs. Right.
Well, and the big labels removing their rights from TikTok. Like that's a huge deal.
Very huge deal.
And I've seen memes of people who are like, you know, all the TikTokers now, and it's like them doing the little dances that go viral and stuff to no music. And it's just like super awkward to look at.
Yeah, they muted those videos. So like any historical videos that had that music has been muted. So yeah, it's created a lot of awkward content. And there's an opportunity there for an independent artist to fill that void. But yeah, it's a significant moment, and there's a lot of talk about, you know, what it means. I think it's probably like they'll come back to the table and they'll create new terms and it'll all come back. I think this is a posturing from UMG. I think TikTok's about to release their own streaming platform, and UMG is using this as a moment to see if they can gain a little bit more leverage, so that when it comes time to work out those licensing deals about what the payment looks like, they've got a head start, and like they're starting to express that like they're willing to step away. And it's significant because when you look at Universal's IP and the number of masters that they own, which is like recordings, it's, when you lump that together, it's about a third of the music industry.
Wow.
It's about 33% of the music industry just from masters and publishing.
That's crazy.
So it's, they, if anybody can make something happen, it's them. Yeah. But at the same time, if they fail, then that also sets a precedent that is very bad too.
Yeah.
If they can't do it, then nobody can.
Well, I think it's a good time for a bourbon break.
Yeah.
Dakota, what's your thoughts?
Rittenhouse, straight rye, 100 proof, bottled in bond. I thought it had a super strong flavor to it. Very strong flavor profile. You can definitely taste that rye, but it's not bad. I'm going to land at a 7.7, I think.
All right. Well, back to the podcast.
Back to the podcast.
So what's some of the biggest challenges that's upcoming for your company right now?
Yeah, it's the same thing I think that everybody struggles with as a new company is like, how do we get clients, right? So, you know, there's a lot of we've got artists coming on board at different levels of the industry, whether they're in the middle, they're, you know, more independent, developing, whatever it might be. But, you know, the cost of doing business for us is high. Like having talented software engineers, like we're spending a lot of money, right? So we have to make money sooner rather than later, or raise more money. So that's always the challenge. So it's really just, it's really about like customer acquisition. And so, you know, we kind of go top down and bottom up at the same time. We have people on the team who are like meeting with artists individually, which is one way to do it, but also hard to scale. And then what I do is mostly talk at an organizational level. So like go to decision makers at a management company that's got 250 artists and say, hey, well, let's do a deal where you guys pay us a blanket license every month, and then all of your artists can come on board, and then we'll build out kind of like an enterprise level solution for you guys where you get all the data and et cetera. So it's still early, kind of somewhat early in those talks, even though we're about to launch the product. I've been waiting until like it's basically fully finished to start having those conversations, because, you know, you only get one opportunity to make a good first impression. And I want to make sure that, whenever we get on those calls, I've got something to show them that's sure. Looks good. And right. It's, you know, meaningful as far as what it can achieve. So yeah, it's going to be money and customers. I think the same thing that most businesses are trying to solve for.
Well, what's the next 6 months look like?
Just heavy growth, heavy development. By the time we get to July, you know, the goal is to have that e-commerce in place and to have that those loyalty ecosystems happening, like kind of on a microcosmic level. So each artist having their own space on the platform where, however a fan comes in, whether it's through a merch sale, a concert, high streaming behaviors, we're building all those onboarding tools. And then they come in and then we can quantify that fandom and turn that into like a loyalty ecosystem. That's a lot of stuff to build. And so the tech team is going to have their head down, working their butts off, trying to achieve that. And then on the sales and marketing side, it's, you know, how do we connect the dots and compete with the big boys? And, you know, obviously we have competitors. Most of them are more well-funded. They've got millions of dollars where we have hundreds of thousands. So yeah, it's going to be a heavy, heavy build and heavy, like just try to grow as fast as we can, really.
Well, nice. Well, we appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah, absolutely.
What were your thoughts on the bourbon?
I like it. I'm a rye guy. I like rye. I like bullet rye a lot, but the Rittenhouse rye is it's good. I think I'm going to go with you. I think 8 out of 10.
All right. Well,
it's good.
We will give them a 7.9. How does that sound?
Sounds great, Tyler.
And for all our listeners, they listen to this and they say, hey, like, I think this is great information. Like,
you know, I have hundreds of millions of followers. Yeah. How do I get in touch with you?
Great what you're doing for the music industry, maybe for podcast people like us. I don't know.
Yeah.
What's the best way for them to get in touch with y'all to, I guess, use your product?
Yeah. So our website is triblymusic.com. Tribly spelled T-R-I-B-L-Y. music.com. The name was inspired by the word tribe. So, you know, like I said, everything is really focused on community. Right now we have a wait list. So like you can come in, you can join the wait list, and then those will be the first people that we engage with to set up product demos and onboarding. And then my email, seth@triblymusic.com. It's a great way to get in touch with me directly. I talk to pretty much anybody and everybody at this point. So yeah, happy to speak to anybody that's interested in what we're doing and would potentially be interested in using the software.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah,
and for all
me.
Our guests, however you stream this podcast, if you would give us a rating and subscribe, and then also go follow us on social media, and we'll see you next week. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode.
If you have any feedback or would like to be featured, reach out to us at bourbonandbusinesspodcast@gmail.com.
Or find us on Instagram at Bourbon and Business Podcast.
Thanks again for listening.
Follow us for more content and info on the next episode.